Well, good morning to you all. It's great to see you here. Thank you for coming to this seminar. Just to tell you who I am, I'm Tom Fenning. I serve as the pastor of Beccles Baptist Church. If you want to know where Beccles is, it's really close to Hemsby, which is where this conference used to be, right on the east of England, out near Lowestoft. That's where we are, in that northeast corner of Suffolk. And I have to say, the six-hour drive yesterday was a delight. I would much rather do that than drive 45 minutes up the coast. That's not true. Emotion intelligence is a topic that I was introduced to when I was studying at Bible College. I got to do my dissertation on emotional intelligence and leadership. I'm not a psychologist. I'm a graduate with a degree in agriculture, and then a guy who's led a church for a few years. I sensed, however, having looked and read about emotional intelligence, that it is a topic that we as pastors, church leaders, really need to have some measure of comprehension of. Just from my sense, can you put your hand up if you are someone who's heard of emotional intelligence before? Put your hands up. Okay, it's pretty much everyone. Put your hands down. Put your hands up if you've ever read a book on emotional intelligence or a reasonably in-depth article on emotional intelligence. Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you very much. My working assumption as I have prepared is that this is an introduction to emotional intelligence for lots of us. If you've read, I hope it helps refresh your minds as to some of the things you've learnt. But I'm trying to give you an introduction to what emotional intelligence is and how a better understanding of it might be useful in church leadership. How am I going to do that? Well, we're going to spend a bit of time. I'm going to be a bit like a car mechanic in that I'm going to give you emotional intelligence, then I'm going to break it down into its big four component parts. I'm going to show you how they work, and then I'm going to put it back together and show you how the whole thing works. And we will find that as we work our way through, that there is a sequence of the component parts working together and being interdependent upon each other. And I hope you see, when I saw it, I just went, that just seems like common sense. And I think that's part of the genius of it. My intention is not to give you a biblical critique. I did that more extensively in my dissertation as to whether emotional intelligence is biblically warranted. My assumption is that we are plundering the Egyptians today. We're finding wisdom that is out there in the world that actually has a clear echo with how the scriptures describe. And we simply remember, don't we, that the Lord Jesus expressed perfect emotion at every point and elicited good emotions from other people. And I'm convinced that Jesus does demonstrate emotional intelligence. In my reading, I read a book called The Emotional Intelligence of Jesus, which in describing emotional intelligence was really helpful. And in talking about Jesus was deeply heretical. Do not read that book, please. But I'm convinced that Jesus did demonstrate real emotional intelligence. Okay, so what is emotional intelligence? Well, here's a simple definition. This is my definition. Emotional intelligence is the ability, one, to understand emotions accurately, and two, manage emotions well in ourselves and in other people. Here it again. It is the ability to understand, that's first, emotions accurately, and manage emotions well, secondly, in ourselves and in other people. Now, you may be sat there thinking, well, but is it really necessary? In leadership, is emotional intelligence that much of a big deal? I say yes, but don't simply take my word for it. Listen to the words of Spock. This is the new Star Trek from 2009. Scotty and Kirk, who's not yet Captain Kirk, have boarded upon the ship. Kirk has been instructed that he's got to get Spock to lose his cool so that Kirk gets to become the captain of the ship. Spock's mum has just died as Spock's planet has been destroyed. I fear I am no longer fit for duty. I hereby relinquish my command based on the fact that I have been emotionally compromised. I think that's a pretty good illustration that actually emotions are really important for leaders, and they can, if we allow destructive emotions to take charge, disqualify us in our task of leadership. Spock was self-aware enough to get that, and I think the quote makes the point reasonably well. So I'm working on the assumption that emotional intelligence in leadership is important and helpful. Okay, what are the building blocks for emotional intelligence? Well, here you go. This is the simplicity of emotional intelligence. It's seen here that there are two big building blocks. There is a personal section and then a social section. And in simple terms, it works like this. In the personal realm, we need to be people who are self-aware. That is, people who understand our emotions and their causes. Then secondly, understanding how we feel, we then need to be able to manage our emotions so that we feel good and nourishing and healthy emotions. And when negative emotions come, we don't let them keep them from taking charge. Then the social realm, empathy. That is social awareness, that capacity to understand how someone else is feeling, and not just what they're feeling, but also why. And then building from that, we find that relationship management is the kind of end goal, and that's really for church leaders where the rubber hits the road, where we seek to lead people in a fashion that helps them have emotions that are good and godly. That can sound quite Machiavellian, can't it? I'm going to control your emotions. But actually, we're going to see that just good leadership doesn't just make us do things. It makes us want the right things and want them to the right degree. These four component parts, self-awareness, self-management, empathy or social awareness, and relationship management are interdependent and they are sequential. So if you are unable to be aware of what you are feeling and why, you will struggle to manage your emotions, you'll be rubbish at understanding what other people feel, and you then won't be able to lead and manage them well. Each is sequential. Each depends upon the other. And we're going to see that as we work our way through. Now, a little bit of neuroscience from a graduate with a degree in agriculture, okay? But I did talk to my friend who's a doctor to make sure that I understand these things right. This is from a book by a guy called Dan Goleman, who's the guy who's made popular the whole notion of emotional intelligence. Here's a picture of a brain. It's over the page in your books, I think. The information comes into the brain at the base, at the spinal cord, and then it travels across the brain through the limbic system. Now, that's the center of our feelings and our emotions, but it doesn't stop there. It also spreads to your prefrontal cortex, which is the place where your rational and logical thinking kicks in. And a healthy brain has a good conversation going on all the time between our feelings and our thinking, so that if something causes us to panic, we can say, is it right for us to panic? Now, tied in with this, there is a part of the limbic system called the amygdala, which is a bit like the panic button in your brain. When depressed, it activates a kind of fight or flight reaction where it just says, we're going to shut the front of the brain down for a bit because we need to run away. Now, in certain situations, if you're faced with a lion that wants to eat you for tea, having the amygdala pressed is really helpful because you don't go, shall I run away? You just run away. But in situations where a destructive emotion takes over and makes you very angry and uncontrolled in a situation where you should be in control, if the amygdala is depressed, you will act like Spock did with Kirk. However, in well-formed brains, so they tell me, you have a 5 to 10 second window in which when the amygdala is depressed, the prefrontal cortex, the thinking bit of the brain, can say, hold on a minute, don't panic, it's okay. But that's got to be in a healthy brain where there's good conversation between the limbic system and between the rational bit of your brains. What might this look like? Well, have you all heard of the story, the tests done with little children, 3-year-old, 4-year-old children, where they're given a marshmallow? They say, if you wait for 3 minutes, you get a second marshmallow. And even in little children like that, a really good test as to whether there's a good conversation going on between these two zones in their brain is whether they can wait. If they can wait, they are children who demonstrate that they've got some measure of control of their emotions. And they're able to think before they then eat. That's just one simple example. Okay, so there's a little bit of neuroscience. I think it helps just thinking, okay, that's how the brain functions. That's how the brain works. Now, what we're going to do is we're just going to work through these four building blocks of emotional intelligence. I'm going to try and take a little bit less than 10 minutes with each and try and push through because I'd like to get to some examples of application at the end. at the end of the first two, self-awareness and self-management, I'm going to get you in pairs just to turn and to talk and answer some questions. And there'll be some opportunity for questions from the floor, but there's loads for us to push through. So there won't be extended periods of time for conversation and questions. My hope is that we might have more towards the end. Okay, first up, self-awareness. Self-awareness. The ability to understand, identify your feelings in yourself. Now, in doing this, you really need to be more like Hermione from Harry Potter than like Ron. There's a scene in the Order of the Phoenix that displays this really well. It's just after Harry's snogged Cho, and the conversation with the three, Harry, Hermione, and Ron, goes something like this. Hermione, how was it? Harry, wet. I mean, she was sort of crying. Ron, that bad at it, are you? Hermione, I'm sure Harry's kissing is more than satisfactory. Cho spends half her time crying these days. Ron, you'd think a bit of snogging would cheer her up. Hermione, don't you understand how she must be feeling? Ron and Harry just stare at Hermione. Well, obviously she's feeling sad about Cedric and therefore confused about liking Harry and guilty about kissing him, conflicted because Umbridge is threatening to sack her mother from her job at the ministry and frightened about failing her OWLs because she's so busy worrying about everything else. Ron, one person couldn't feel that at once, they'd explode. Hermione, just because you've got the emotional range of a teaspoon. And then the three of them burst out laughing. The danger is that we are more like Ron and less like Hermione. We are unable to identify the things we feel, unable to understand and interpret them and their causes. Now, for each of these big building blocks, they each get split up into smaller parts. The building blocks and the parts I've taken from a book written by Dan Goleman called Working with Emotional Intelligence. I'm just trying to distill some of his wisdom in this. So the first part of self-awareness is emotional awareness, what Hermione was demonstrating in spades in that quote. Not just about being aware of our feelings, but being aware of how they are caused and how they therefore affect us. I think of a church I've served in the past with one of the people who led quite a large ministry. And they were very, very able in leading the ministry, but they were less aware of their emotions, particularly when things were fraught, and the way in which those emotions then affected them in how they led and how they then spread to other people. And for this leader to develop, they needed to be able to better understand how their emotions affected them. And that wasn't something that we tried to tackle head on, but just working with them through those things. Emotional awareness is important in self-awareness. But then more than just being aware of our feelings, two other parts are here. First up, an accurate self-assessment. That is a clear and accurate understanding of our strengths and weaknesses, as well as our flaws and failings. This is developed especially by people who are reflective, able to think, and able just to go back over, why did I think that? And people who are humble enough to take feedback, other people observing, you seem really cross today. Ah, that's how I feel when I'm cross. We are able to develop an accurate self-assessment as people feed us information. Note, please, that really able people in leadership and people who have good emotional intelligence are not bottomless pits. They have limits, but they just know where their limits are. They know what they can and they can't do. And then the third part here is self-confidence. Now, this stems from an accurate self-assessment and an ability to control your emotions. There's a clear link between there that you are confident in what I can do. This is my zone. I can do this. This is okay. But it springs from understanding yourself. Now, note, please, that there are levels to this self-awareness. Someone can be aware of their feelings, but not aware of their causes. that means that when they can go into a room where someone is who will really push their buttons, and they start feeling angry, and they go, I'm feeling angry. But if someone can understand the causes, they will go to that meeting, and they go, yikes, that guy's going to be there. I need to sit well away from him, and I need to bite my tongue. We're moving into self-management there, but can you understand causes as well as feelings are really important? You've got to understand both of them, and you'll just know actually moments where you felt wise or informed, and you've taken those steps because you've gone, hold on a minute. When I go to that party, I'm going to be really excited, and I need to be careful that I don't do too much dancing because my children will be there. I don't know, those sort of things. Now, the question is, what is self-awareness biblical? I'm just going to give you a kind of verse or two as we go through. There's not much that I'm going to be able to say. But just to say, I think this is the kind of assumed thing all the time. The verse that's already been mentioned this morning, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourselves with sober judgment in accordance with the faith that God has distributed to each of you. That's Romans 12, verse 3. God expects us to understand ourselves, to have a humble assessment and an accurate assessment of who we are. Lots of this is just assumed. However, one word of limitation on a secular understanding of emotional intelligence, and that is secular folk fail to understand that we are people made in the image of the God of heaven. And actually, for you to understand who you are, fundamentally, you've got to understand who God is, haven't you? And actually, the better you get to know God, the more you get to know yourself. John Calvin even says there's a measure in which the more we get to understand ourselves, there's a way in which we kind of get to know God. Here's a quote from the Institutes. Nearly all the wisdom we possess, that is to say true and sound wisdom, consists of two parts, the knowledge of God and of ourselves. But while joined by many bonds, which one proceeds and brings forth the other is not easy to discern. Secular understanding of emotional intelligence is some steps back from where a Christian understanding of emotional intelligence could be, because we just get to know God, and therefore we get to know ourselves that bit better. It's really hard to overstate how important this stage of emotional intelligence is. I wonder how highly you'd score yourself on your self-awareness. Okay, self-management. I'm going to get you to turn into pairs and talk at the end of this one, okay? So we're just going to keep pressing on for the moment. Self-management. Now, this is the ability to having understood our feelings, our strengths and weaknesses, then to act upon them appropriately. I can remember a scene, a church I'd previously attended, I'd got to speak at the prayer meeting this evening. At the prayer meeting, and I've been quite frank, I've just spoken quite clearly about hell and heaven and the need for us to crave to be holy, and that should shape how we pray. There was a guy there who had aspirations of being a leader. He left partway through my talk and then returned at the end of the meeting while people were still milling around. And he came and spoke to me, and he said, Tom, have you got a minute? And displaying crass emotional intelligence, I said cheekily, oh, there's two if you're lucky. And then he just was very clearly really cross with what I'd said. But the problem was, he wasn't in charge, his emotions were, and he wasn't in control of them. He was angry, he was talking loudly, he was saying things that were unfair and untrue, as well as things that were fair and true, that I could have been more sensitive. But he was demonstrating that he didn't have what he needed for leadership in that moment, because he just wasn't managing himself well. His emotions were in charge. What are the component parts of self-management? Well, first up, self-control. If you can't find a biblical connection with that, then I can't help you, okay, because there's loads, but we'll see them. I will help you. I'll tell you in a minute where they are. Okay. Now, self-control is that ability, as we've seen, to keep our emotions in check. Again, think of the kids with their marshmallows. I won't have it now. I'll wait 3 minutes, and then I double my lot. But self-management is not simply just saying, I'm just going to keep my anger bottled down. I'm not going to worry too much or be too fearful. It is being able to foster the right emotions. and then being able to demonstrate those emotions well. We're going to see, I think that can be a bit of a failing of ours as leaders, that not just that we feel right, but that we demonstrate that we're feeling right to other people so that they understand. We'll see that as we come to relationship management in a bit. In addition to self-control, there are other aspects that Dan Goleman in his Understanding of Emotional Intelligence talks about. Again, these just look like godliness to me. Trustworthiness. You keep your word. Now, you might be sat there thinking, hold on a minute, what on earth has that got to do with emotions? What is it that drives you to lie, if not emotions a lot of the time? I'm fearful that they will think I'm just an idiot. I'm fearful I'll get told off, etc. Trustworthiness is really important. And to be able to tell the truth just requires you to say, actually, no, I'm happy for them to think I'm an idiot. I'm happy to be told off. That requires emotional maturity. Conscientiousness, that ability to take responsibility for your performance and being able to work hard, is that ability to say, I'm going to remove the distractions and I'm going to focus. And I'm not going to let other people interrupt because I've got to get this thing done. Conscientiousness. And then almost as a complete contrast to that, the ability to be adaptable and innovative. So that's that ability just to go with the flow. You might say, well, what's that? What's the emotional connection with that? Well, to go with the flow is a willingness to deal with ambiguity and the unknown. So that will likely cause us to be worried and anxious, especially if we're control freaks like me. But to go, that's okay. We can deal with this ambiguity. We'll take a chance. That's okay. Can you see how some of these component parts are seemingly in tension with each other? But that's necessary. And you're likely thinking, I'm more a conscientious person, or I'm more an adaptable person, but knowing where you are is important. And the key thing is that we are flexible. So that it's all a balancing act. I'll say that over the page, and we've just got to be self-aware as to where we will need to cut against the grain. If being conscientious is the thing that you think, no, I'm just really good at being adaptable and flexible, then it might be for you cutting against the grain. It's just saying, hold on, I've got to block out the distractions and I'm just going to concentrate on this thing that needs to get done. It might be vice versa, but we need to know ourselves. Now, a critical subset of self-management, Goleman at some points makes this a kind of fifth category. I find it slightly confusing when it is this whole area of motivation. This ability to basically drive yourself forward to achieve well. So that three parts, achievement drive, initiative, that ability just to say, I'm going to take charge. There's something that needs to be done. I'm going to do it and I'm going to get it done. And then optimism too, that persistence in pursuing goals despite obstacles and setbacks. Now, you may look at those three things. You may say, well, hold on a minute. Those are just good work ethics. Again, what's the emotional connection to these? Well, I think in situations where things go badly, it's very easy for people to become despondent, isn't it? Whereas actually that capacity to say, in spite of the setbacks, we're going to be rightly optimistic that we can press on here. Again, there's an emotional dimension for that to function, isn't there? And that's why optimism is really important. I can think of a youth leader I heard of who was leading a youth group at quite a large church, and the year that they were leading, they got a great team of leaders that could cope with loads of kids. They had three kids. And you know what they said? The leaders said, we're going to go and we're going to invest everything we've got into these three. And those three, a number of years on, are still going really strong. But that drive to say, actually, we've got a great opportunity to invest really heavily in three mature young people. What could God do? That takes emotional intelligence, I think, to do that. And a key part of this kind of self-motivation, this achievement drive, initiative, optimism, is how people deal with stress and whether they can have that balancing act of embracing good stress. You understand what I mean? That kind of sense of, there's a deadline looming, I've got to get this done, I've got to press on, but I'm not allowing that stress to so overwhelm them that they become a gibbering wreck or powerless to do the work. Again, dealing with that good stress, again, requires emotional intelligence. Is it biblical? Is self-control biblical? Can I get an answer? Yeah, okay, there you go. So look at the qualifications for elders in Titus 1 and in 1 Timothy, and there you find it. Think of Paul as well in his drive to just work harder than anybody else in spite of massive suffering that he knows he is facing and will face. He presses on. So is self-management something that in the Bible? That's just easy peasy. This is the easiest one. Yes, I'm convinced it is. So here's a question for you in pairs. Okay, pairs, threes. If you must, fours, definitely not fives. Why might self-awareness and self-management be important abilities for a leader to have? Talk for a minute or two, and then we'll take some feedback and then press on. Five, four, three, two, one. Okay. Any comments or questions? You shout it out. I'll repeat it back so that people can hear. Just a minute or two for this. Great. If you can't manage and understand your own emotions in your own life, how are you then ever going to do so in other people that you're hoping to lead? Bill, thank you. Definitely, we have a greater effect on people than we'd think, not least with our emotions. We're going to see that in a minute or two, very much. That's a massive thing. Great. Yeah, you validate expression of emotion by expressing emotion and doing so appropriately. That's brilliant. Great. Great. That's hard to say as an Englishman, I think, sometimes, isn't it? Brilliant. Yeah, so if you are able to be calm and self-controlled, I've got an example of that coming up, while someone else is losing it, other people can go, okay, it is possible. Gives a sense of hope. Okay, last one. Brilliant. Be a shepherd. Lead by example. That includes how we manage our own emotions. Brill. Okay, we've done. Okay, congratulations, people. We've completed 50% of the paradigm. Okay, now we're moving into the social realm, and we're going to think about social awareness, which is the awareness of others' feelings, needs, and concerns. You've probably had enough of me speaking. You're probably after a clip from Sesame Street. That's what you're going to have. Do I need to say anything more? Here you go, component parts for social awareness. First up, understanding others. It is, again, hard to overestimate and overstate how important this capacity is. If you can manage your own emotions and understand them, this is the key link to move to anything else. It reminds me of that quote about the ring in The Lord of the Rings. One ring to rule them. One ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them. This is the one emotion, seemingly to rule them all. Their capacity to be able to empathize with other people, as Murray wonderfully learnt under the tutelage of Mark Ruffalo. And it's here that I think you start to see how these four component parts, self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship management, are connected sequentially. Let me explain how. I want you to imagine that you are sat and talking with someone and you are doing a good job of listening to them actively. So you'll know, if you've ever been listened to well by someone, what do? They mirror you, just naturally. So if you have got your legs crossed and your hand on your chin, then that's what they do. Or if you're sat back with your arms crossed, that's what they do. And as they talk, or as you're listening, if you're someone else is talking and you're listening and you're mirroring them, and they start to talk about their feelings, you don't simply hear the data of what they're saying. If they start to well up and to cry, what do? Probably you start to well up yourself. You feel it too. And the mirroring goes to a level that you can't see. If you're listening actively and well, you are actually mirroring them to the point of rate of breathing, even pulse rate. You can't see it. And then what's going on in your mind is that you are then mirroring their feelings. In the last 10 years, there's been in neuroscience a better understanding of something called mirror neurons, which is part of your brain that's able to mirror what other people are feeling. And at that point, as you're actively listening to someone, you're not simply listening to the words, you are listening to your own feelings. And it's at that point that you get how important self-awareness is. Because you've got to be aware of how am I feeling. If the person talking to me is anxious, I'm probably feeling some of their anxiety too. But at that point, I need to be able to read myself, because we are mirroring and therefore learning from their feelings. So for us to be people who are emotionally intelligent, we've got to be good listeners. Sound like James? You must be slow to speak. It's usually quick to listen. That's the first one, isn't it? Quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. We've got to be good listeners. And note here, again, there's several levels. So there's first, if you're talking to an individual, there is the ability to understand what they're feeling. Then secondly, the ability to understand what's causing those feelings. And then there's another level, which probably has several levels within it, which is the ability to understand how a group of people are feeling. And then understand the multiple causes as to why the group is feeling like it is. And that takes some skill and takes some time. But if you're at a church, if you're overseeing a group for any length of time, the more you get to know people and their relationships and networks, you'll start to understand all those things. And talking for myself, there's things that we've done at Beccles Baptist Church, where I'm the pastor, things we sought to do. And when I'm thinking about introducing something that might be slightly controversial, like getting rid of the organ, which we did very recently, which is actually the easiest sell ever, I worked really hard at talking to people who I'd say are trendsetters, particularly good bellwethers who give me the emotional read on the whole church. There's probably about a dozen people that I'd talk to. But as I hear what they are thinking, they will speak for other people, but then they would also be able to persuade other people, and being able to listen well at that point is really, really important. A couple of warnings. First up, understanding how someone feels doesn't necessarily mean you're agreeing with how they're feeling or that they're feeling rightly. And secondly, beware of faux empathy. Beware of pretending just to, oh, really, I feel that too. I understand. When you really don't, people will see through you faster than you would know. And it would be worth, I think, if you're here from teams from your church, just trying to think, how do we foster greater capacity to be people who empathize with one another? How do we set up our meetings? How do we spend time with each other so that we do genuinely understand how each other are feeling? And then there's a couple of other parts here, kind of picture of levering diversity, that ability to understand strengths that people from other cultures or other gift sets, personalities will bring to a team, and it's being able to utilize those. There's also this whole dimension of political awareness that we've spoken about already. Is it biblical? Totally. Totally. I just think that's just, again, a bit of a no-brainer. We need to be people who are quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. And like Romans 12, verse 15 says, we are to be those who mourn with those who mourn and rejoice with those who rejoice. Listening well, loving people, understanding them is just key. There's just no substitute to spending time with people and helping ourselves get to know how they are feeling. Well, I've given you a question. Question just to talk about in pairs, just for a minute or two at the bottom of this. What habits can we develop personally as leaders and as church to help us develop empathy and social awareness? Just talk with pairs, threes again, just for a minute or two, and then we'll keep going. 10 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2. 1. Okay. Good buzz around the room. I'm not going to ask you for feedback because the time is becoming my enemy and I want to keep going and get to the end. I am emotionally aware of the burden the clock is placing on me, so we're going to keep going. Okay. Relationship management. Okay, here we go. This is where the rubber hits the road. This is where things start to earth and make a difference. Please, please, please beware of trying to shortcut to this stuff without doing the hard yards we've done already, of understanding yourself, managing yourself well, understanding other people. Those are essentials if we are going to be people who develop genuine and godly emotional intelligence. If you just jump straight to relationship management, do you know who you're going to end up looking like and sounding like? David Brent. Okay, He's the personification of a guy who just went, I went to the last chapter of the book and I'm doing nothing about myself. And I don't want to go to a church led by David Brent or any of his minions, please. But understanding the importance of the steps that have gone before will enable us that in our spheres of leadership at church to be able to encourage people to honour the Lord Jesus. And the thing is, when we're seeking to do that, we don't simply want people to go, all right, I'll do what you say, or all right, I'll do what God says, but to say, I want to do what God says. This is the best thing for me. This is the joyful thing for me, and, well, it's what I want to do. But don't simply take my word for it. Think for a moment of the sheep pig and Babe. Familiar with the film or with the book, the pig that becomes a sheep pig, not a sheep dog. And in this scene, we find that the farmer is giving Babe a rest and letting Fly, the sheep dog, go back to work. The farmer kept Babe on the lead all one morning, letting Fly, the sheep dog, do the work as of old. But it was rather interesting to note the instant change in atmosphere as the collie ran out. Wolf! Wolf! Cried the flock, every sheep immediately on edge. Moo, fools! Snapped Fly as she hustled them and bustled them with little regard for their feelings. Babe! We want Babe! They bleated. Babe! You can tell I've got an agriculture degree, can't you? To be sure, the work was done more quickly, but at the end of it, the sheep were in fear and trembling, and the dog was out of patience and breath. Steady, steady, called the farmer a number of times, something he never had to say to Babe. Who do you want to be like? The pig or the dog? That doesn't sound like an attractive option, choice of options, though, does it? But you want to be someone who's able to encourage, lead, spur others on with plenty of regard for their feelings, don't you? That's what I'd like to. I want them to not just do what the Lord Jesus calls them to do, but to want to do it. And that means I need to be someone who develops emotional intelligence. But here's the key thing. This bit is gold, okay? And you know it's true. Emotions are contagious. Emotions are contagious. And you just know this, don't you? If there's someone who's an extrovert and fun and engaging and full of life, if they come into a room that's maybe just a bit feeling a bit kind of average, what happens to the emotional tone of the room? It goes up. I think of Victor. He was a guy from Sierra Leone in our home group when we were back in Dunstable. You longed for him to get to home group because everyone was going to have a party when he comes, because he comes in and he's fun and he really loves people. And so there's a sense of we are loved by, we love Victor being here and it's fun. This is fun. This is good. Emotions are contagious and this is gold. Note this. This is really good news. What's more effective in spreading like a social virus? Destructive and negative emotions or positive ones? Positive ones. Positive emotions actually travel further and are more effective. Dan Goleman, this put this quote, I think, in your booklet. Emotions are powerful messages conveying crucial information without necessarily putting that data into words. Emotions are hyper-efficient modes of communication. Think of one example of this. Again, I'm going back to a prayer meeting at a church I used to attend. There's a guy in the middle of the pastor preaching who interrupted and challenged him on something that he'd said. And he was cross. And you could feel the tension in the room. And then the pastor, with implacable calm, asked him helpful questions, responded firmly and really graciously. And it was fascinating watching the room and sensing the room of this kind of tug of war between kind of feeling nervous and angry and anxious and aggressive and feeling calm. And feeling. But the thing was, the pastor had this in his favor. He's the pastor. And so people were looking to him to set the emotional note in that room. And so what overwon was there's a kind of sense of unease about the fact that this conversation was going on, and yet a sense of calm. Because the pastor's calm. And he seems to be in control. And he's demonstrating that emotionally. That's okay. That's okay. And so the mood that won the day was calm. Slightly flustered, but calm. Why? Because emotions are contagious. Now, we could spend a session on each of these component parts, and I don't want to because I want to basically move on and talk about some observations and some applications. So here are some component parts. First up, influence. Sometimes this is called assertiveness. This is the ability to wield persuasive tactics of effective tactics of persuasion. So someone with good emotional intelligence can persuade not just with logic, but also with appropriate feeling and appropriate emotion. And you'll no doubt have sat and talked with someone with whom you disagree, and you listen carefully, and they persuade you, but not necessarily just from logic, but also with a sense of right emotion. People with low emotional intelligence, when it comes to making decisions in church or in any life, what do? They impose the decision, and they don't talk to people. And do you know how many people want to come with them? Usually none, because you haven't involved us in the process. And they haven't involved often, either because they're lazy or because they're scared that they might not be able to persuade them to come with them. Emotional intelligence is important for influence. Communication. That means listening well and then conveying and communicating with convincing messages. Communicators with emotional intelligence will be able to not just help you win your mind, but win your heart. And my guess is we're all sat there thinking, I can think of a preacher when they've done that for me. And we love it because we want to love Jesus more. And a preacher will helpfully communicate well. Conflict management. So, church leaders here, you've probably in the last month had a number of awkward conversations. How do you feel when you head into those awkward conversations? Well, I always feel anxious and concerned. I'm praying, but I've got to have emotional intelligence so that I don't lose it in that meeting and so that I remain calm and I try and win the person and the argument. Without emotional intelligence, man, things are going south and they're doing it quickly at that point. Leadership. Leadership. Inspiring and guiding individuals and groups. Whether we like it or not, people in our churches pay more attention to those in positions of leadership than the other people in the pew. That means that they will mimic us, whether we like it or not, as children do with their parents. And fundamentally, that will happen at our level of our emotions. And so that means that we as leaders need to work hard, not just in feeling rightly, but actually being able to exhibit our emotions appropriately. Remember when I worked as an assistant pastor with Mark Lawrence in Dunstable, I can remember one of my very first appraisals, Mark sat me down, and as part of it, part of his more direct feedback to me, he said, Tom, I have no idea what you're thinking and what you're feeling a lot of the time. And you know what? How I took that? As a real compliment. Yeah, I'm a strong man. It was not, it was a rebuke, and man, it was a sign of massive leadership weakness. Because actually, people have got to be able to understand what you're thinking and how you're feeling. And that's, if you're going to progress as a leader, you've got to think, how do I demonstrate my emotions appropriately for people to latch on? Oh, okay, this is something to be excited about. This is something to be sad about. This is something to be confident about. They're just going to look at you. And here's a challenge for people who are introverts. If you are an introvert, you will likely find it harder to emote your feelings, transmit your feelings appropriately. Introverts often do, however, have the strength that they are able more to reflect on how they are feeling and can often understand their feelings better. They've then got to do the hard yards of going, right, how do I transmit that appropriately? On the converse, an extrovert, they can convey emotion, but not always the right emotion or to the right degree. Because often, not always, but often extroverts find that point of self-awareness and reflection harder. Because they want to talk. They want to show. It's a balance. Are you an introvert or are you an extrovert? There's probably more introverts in the room. Usually, I think more, it's just how the numbers split. There are blokes, men, there are more men who are introverts than extroverts. Are you aware of that? Do you think, okay, in my leadership, how do I kind of convey my emotions appropriately? Are you an extrovert? Do you need to rein back how quickly you show your emotions? Just a thought. Then another couple of things. Change catalyst. I want to talk about that in just a sec. Church leadership is massively about change. Change is an emotionally laden topic. We'll think in a sec. collaboration and cooperation, that ability to see in other people strengths that they would bring, especially when they're strengths that are very different from you. You can see, hold on, that they would really different, but they would be really good at. That takes emotional intelligence, because you're saying, I'm taking a punt because I don't know what it's like to be like that, but they seem like they're godly and capable. Is it biblical? Well, this is a really hard. How do you? I'm saying yes. Where do you go for that? Well, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 14, I think it's quite a helpful verse. It talks about the kind of range of ways in which we are to instruct people. We urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle and disruptive, encourage the disheartened, help the weak, be patient with everyone. Different people need different relationship management at any one point, and there's a diversity there, and you need to think how you can do that well. I mean, other places, like the verse that was mentioned last night by Colin Smith, 1 Timothy 3:4, is all about managing your household well. The word literally means exercising leadership, remembering that a household back there was not just a couple of kids, but probably a small business. And for someone to demonstrate that they could manage a small business well, it just takes emotional intelligence to lead people, not just to do, but to want to do what is good. Okay, question for you to talk about, and then we're going to think about a couple of worked examples. How might we be helped if we think more of how to lead people emotionally? I add in there emotionally and spiritually. The spiritually is assumed. And what might be at stake if we only think of leading people logically and administratively? A couple of minutes, off you go. 10 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. Any comments, questions? Just for a couple of minutes, and then we're going to press on. Brilliant. How do you walk that fine line of leading people emotionally and being manipulative? Be godly, and you'll be fine. I think I'm going to talk in a sec about how we identify leaders, and we do need to think, hold on, when we identify both in ourselves and in other people things that would equip them for leadership, emotional intelligence is one of a number of traits we've got to have there, and one of them is real godliness. And I think leading with other leaders, I think saying to them, did I strike the right note there? I think one of the other things that you can keep from being manipulative is actually to genuinely listen to people and being willing to say, actually, maybe I need to have my mind changed. And if you do that hard work of listening hard before you then speak, that's probably a good sign that you're at least trying not to be manipulative, and then your other fellow leaders could help. Great question. Yeah, preaching has emotion in it. Lecturing doesn't really need to, although the best lecturers I ever heard had feeling too. I'd love to do a seminar and much more thinking on emotional intelligence and preaching. I think it'd be really helpful. Time doesn't allow. Yeah, so the role can give you a sense of people's perception of strength because you're at the front and you're kind of in control. How can we counter? I think one way that we can counter that is just being transparent, and if we're tender about something, being able to demonstrate not just strength but tenderness and maybe sadness and sorrow. And I had a speaker who came and spoke at an event I was at, and he talked about real struggles, and he did it with tears in his eyes. And actually being able to demonstrate that just says, hold on, this emotion is it validates that emotion if we can do that from the front. But again, that takes real character and I think emotional intelligence to do that. So I think we need to be aware of just portraying ourselves as strong people from the front. Does that answer your question? Great, yeah, so because you're in a position of power, we need to be doubly cautious in how we portray our emotions, that if we're being really strong, someone can do that in a conversation with one other person, and it doesn't have the same amplification it would from us from the front. Okay, last question. That's okay. Brilliant. We need to be our redeemed selves. We need to express emotion in a way that's appropriate for the way that God has made us. Absolutely bang on. If you're an introvert, you're not being told to become someone who's a crazy extrovert. You need to think, how does an introvert genuinely convey their emotion? Totally. Totally. That's a really helpful comment. Okay. Let me just make some... A couple of observations. I've made most of these observations as I've gone through, actually, so I'm just going to jump down to the third observation down there. Growth in emotional intelligence is hard work but possible. Why is that the case? So that conversation, remember the picture of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, the limbic system, and it's a conversation going on between them. Interestingly, in your brain, the psychologists say that your IQ is pretty much fixed in your brain. You can't do anything about that. But when it comes to your EQ, your emotional intelligence, there is a large amount of neuroplasticity in your brain. So your brain can basically work out and grow its capacity to have emotional intelligence. However, here's the problem. Emotional intelligence has a required output of emotion. And I don't know about you, but I can't just say to myself, feel the right emotion. Because how do you get to right emotion? You do actions that forge habits, that shape character, that then cashes out ultimately in emotion. And I think one of the, it's a helpful illustration to picture how emotional intelligence is hard work but possible is given by a guy called Drew Bird in his book. I mentioned it on the back page of your booklet. He describes it. Imagine for a moment you live in a thick forest in a shack in the middle of it, and every day you walk to the lake to catch fish to eat for your tea. One day you bump into one of your friends and he says, you've got to go and get the fish from the river. It is amazing. Once you eat that, you'll eat nothing else. And so on the next day, you decide, okay, I'm going to go to the river. But you've got to cut a new path through thick forest. It is hard work going through the forest. You're trying to cut a path. You're getting scratched, bruised, hurt, slightly lost. But eventually, you get to the river. You catch the fish. You bring it back through that hard path again. You cook it and you go, boy, was my friend right. The fish is amazing. The next day, you have a decision to make. Do you go the easy way or do you go the hard way that's maybe slightly less hard than it was yesterday? And the more you travel that new path, the more ingrained it becomes. And so if we are people who find expressing emotion hard, the more you try and do it, it'll feel really clunky the first few times, but the more you do it in a way that's appropriate for the way that God has made you, the more it becomes possible, actually becomes part of who you are. And there's loads of others that we could talk about. So I think emotional intelligence is possible, is really hard, and actually lots of it set in, if you've had a stable family, often our upbringing shapes quite a bit. Those kids with the marshmallows, if they can wait, there's some research that traced them like 20 years down the tracks. Kids that at four could wait 3 minutes were much less likely to suffer from issues of mental health, to go to jail, or all those kind of lifestyle issues, which are really tough, shaped largely back then. But our brains are not lost causes, actually. The emotional intelligence can grow, but it's hard work. Okay, that's the one observation I want to make. The others I've already said. Some application. Identifying leaders. I think understanding emotional intelligence, for me, has given me the ability, I think it's thrown into the mix of when I'm thinking of who could potentially serve as a leader in my church, that I'm thinking about how emotionally intelligent are they. That's not the label I'm always using, but I am thinking, are they aware of their own feelings and their causes? Are they able to manage their own emotions healthily? They have a good work ethic. Are they able to empathize with other people? Do they listen well? Or do they just send emails and say, this is what we're doing? And are they able to manage relationships healthily? Not perfectly, but are those things in place or not? And I think it would just be a helpful thing as having a bit of a matrix of, okay, I don't just want people who are godly. I want people who have character. And so imagine for a moment a scatter graph with godliness on the vertical axis, emotional intelligence on the horizontal axis. People in your church are everywhere. People with very low godliness and emotional intelligence. Then there's people who are right out in the stratosphere over here, the person you dream of being. And then people elsewhere. And you just need to think, okay, if we're picking someone to be a leader at church, we're probably going, I want them in this quadrant. I want them both really godly so that they're not manipulative, but I also want them to show some emotional smarts too. But you might have people like this guy over here, but he's really godly. He's got some work to do. Could we work with him? Well, maybe, but you've probably just got to help him quite a bit more. Or this person over here. I don't know. You can decide about that. But that qualification is just helpful. Okay, am I thinking about how emotionally intelligent someone is? Is that a helpful matrix to bring in trying to identify leaders? And just on this, there's a really excellent book that Ray Evans put me onto called The Ideal Team Player by Pat Lencioni. And Pat Lencioni is a kind of secular leadership guy. I think he's a kind of God-fearing Catholic, is my perspective. He talks about three key qualifications for leaders. They've got to be hungry. They've got to work really hard and be willing to graft. They've got to be humble. And they've got to be, his word is smart. He means emotionally intelligent. And he's got a really excellent little Venn diagram of kind of, if you've got two of these things but not the third, what do you become? If you've got one of them, what do you become? And he does sound a note of warning here when talking about emotional intelligence or relationship smarts. He says this: keep in mind, being smart doesn't necessarily imply good intentions. Smart people can use their talents for good or ill. In fact, some of the most dangerous people in history have been noted for being interpersonally smart. So just be careful. They've got to be godly. They've got to be hardworking. They've got to be humble. That, commend that book to you if you want to think about that a little bit more. And he's got some really helpful interview questions. Some interview questions as to how do you discern whether someone is emotionally intelligent or not? Thinking especially for a staff appointment. What do you do that others in your personal life might find annoying? Are they self-aware enough to know that? What do other people do to annoy you? And how do you cope? But one of the things, most of all, I think, in an interview process is you want to spend time. Pat Lencioni says, if someone's emotionally intelligent, they're just the kind of people you like to spend some time with, even if they're different from you. So there you go, identifying leaders. I think that's one application. One more. Man, I'd love at least one whole session on this, but I'm going to try and do it really quickly. Managing change. Managing change. Leadership in the local church invariably means leading God's people through change. That's what sanctification is, first and foremost, isn't it? Leading, but also, actually, for a church to thrive and continue to go on thriving and growing, we must introduce points of change, whether that's starting or ending a new ministry or an old ministry, be that appointing a new staff member, changing your style or purpose of a group, or service, planting a church, running a building project. What you need is to be able to manage change. And here's the problem. People's fundamental response to change is emotional. It is emotional. There will be some people for whom they're just faddish. So if you introduce any change, they'll go, this is just terrific. Then there will be people who are stuck in the mud who will say, no way. But the fundamental response to change is emotional. And you need to think, how do I understand the emotions that I am feeling about this? How do I manage those emotions wisely? And then how do I understand how other people are feeling about this? And how do I manage emotions well? Another, Ray Evans just recommends me all the books about leadership. I did recommend him one the other day, which I felt really good about. And he's read it, which is exciting. On leading change with emotional intelligence, this book called Illuminate is one of the funnest and best designed books you'll read by two ladies, Nancy Duarte and Patty Sanchez. I think Nancy is a Christian. Leslie Neuhoff, his leadership blog, has interviewed them about this. And they talk about how the process of leading change, they're talking about secular organizations, but there's massive connection for churches too. Leaders have this responsibility, that every point of change, a leader must provide the emotional fuel that the people need. A leader must provide the emotional fuel that the people need. And they just talk about five steps as to how that happens, that you're to dream about what you'd like to become. You leap into the unknown. You fight when things go wrong and try and sort things out. You climb, and then you arrive. I'm just thinking, just personal experience. In Beccles, we have just, back in July, completed a building project. We've got lots of able builders in our church who did it, a lot of it in-house, not all of it, which meant that we could keep the costs down. When it came to introducing the idea of doing the building work, to try and conjure up, I wasn't thinking about what we're doing, but as I reflect, I think this is what I was trying to do. We had a members meeting, and we just said, I think we all feel like we need to do something with our auditorium. We can create some more space, and we can just have a much nicer feel. Nothing's been done to it for 20 years. It looks tired. What could we do? Talking groups. And there was just a sense of excitement about the possibility of changing. The very first comment someone made was, the organ's got to go. And at which point I went, and everyone went, yeah, the organ's got to go. But I was setting the emotional note of excitement about what we could do and to change. And then later on, the work took a long time to complete. It was going on for 5 months. Our church auditorium looked more and more like a Wetherspoons pub as more plaster came off the wall, more brickwork was revealed, kind of copper pipe work on display. And there's one guy who's a cantankerous sort of guy who was really negative about how the place just looked like a garage. And one or two of the guys who'd been working their socks off got wind of it, and they were really sad, really got to them. And actually, as a leader, I just wanted to chase the person who felt hurt and just want to say, that guy doesn't speak for the room. We think you're doing a great job. Keep going. We're so grateful. And then just being able to talk with the church about what was going on. And the final phase of, once the building work was completed, part of me thought, I don't really want to do a Thanksgiving service. There's loads of other things to do. But actually, I think the emotionally intelligent thing to do was to have a Thanksgiving service, to thank God, and to say to people, we've arrived. Isn't God so kind? And these guys here, aren't we so grateful to them for all that they've done? And to have failed to do that would have been emotionally tone deaf, would have dropped the ball. And so I think emotional intelligence really is a helpful thing to understand. I hope what I've shared might have been of help, but I hope, and if it just gets the ball rolling, if you're going to read one book on emotional intelligence, it's a slightly longer book, but it's this one by Dan Goleman called Working with Emotional Intelligence. There are other Christian books out there, so don't read Emotional Intelligence of Jesus. If I find out you've read that book after you heard me say that, I'm going to come and chase you down and have a stern word with you. There's other books I've read. There's one by a guy called Peter Scazzaro. I didn't find it very helpful. You can read it if you want to. I won't chase you down on that one. But this one I found really helpful. So there. I think I've said enough. Any questions, any comments, last few? Yes. Great. This will be the last question. Can you be over empathetic and kind of lose control of your emotions? I think the fact that emotional intelligence is on, at some point you have to have those things, there are capacities in tension. So empathy and influence or assertiveness are kind of some of the things that are in tension. I think you can get so embroiled in how someone's feeling that you're not processing, are they thinking right? Are they feeling right? Whereas we need all the time in listening to people to be listening critically and saying, you got it wrong there. And that just takes some maturity to actually be in the moment and to be a critical and yet a loving and godly listener. But the danger is that we just get drawn along and we start to be complicit with them in wrong thinking, wrong emotion. We've just got to have our wits about us and try and think critically about those things. That'd be awesome.